Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Dice.
My name is Austin.
All right. Austin, my man, what's up?
What's up, brother?
And I just want to go ahead and know right now, what are you smoking on?
What am I smoking on? What are you smoking on?
some of the finest tobaccos in the world, my friend.
Fair enough. I am smoking the H. Upman Nicaragua by A.J. Fernandez.
H. Upman, don't you say?
I do say. Why, sir, whatever are you smoking?
I am smoking The Banker by H. Upman.
Ooh.
We're smoking the same brand.
Same brand. Yeah, same brand, different lines.
All right. Different origin stories.
All right. And and what Hennessy are you pairing that with today?
I'm actually drinking XO. It actually feels like I should be drinking XO with something called The Banker Day Trader. Doesn't that sound like something XO related?
It definitely sounds XO related.
And I see you're sipping. What are we drinking on, sir?
I am sipping on the Fulling Station straight wheat whiskey.
Wheat? Have you drank that one on air before? That sounds new.
I don't think I have.
Okay.
If I have, then I just talked shit and said something else. I don't know.
We'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take it. So Dice, what is our cigar topic?
Our cigar topic today is something a little out of a little different. I was going through some things and I came across a Google image that made me want to dive a little deeper. And it's cigar ads in the tobacco industry.
Cigar ads?
Yeah. Oh,
sir, we cannot advertise tobacco.
That's what it boiled down to, but we'll go into it a little deeper. And what is our leadership topic? I don't remember.
Leadership topic is, I think you will like this one. It is 7 leadership skills for risk managers.
Ah, okay. Yes. Yes, that's a great topic.
That is a great topic. I am excited. I'm excited about the whole show. Love it. Can't wait. So let's dive on in.
All right. We'll do that. Cigar ads. Tobacco advertising in America first appeared in 1789.
Wait a minute. Didn't we just get our independence in 1776?
We got our independence, and then we was like, we're going to do some tobacco ads.
I like it. We said, fuck that tea shit.
we got a different tea.
We got leaves for some different reason.
How do you pronounce Laura? Laura Lord? Laura Lord? How do you pronounce that? Laura? I'm not from 1789, so I can't pronounce it.
Laura Lord? We'll go with Lorillard.
Lorillard Brothers advertised their snuff and tobacco products in the local New York daily paper, a regular as that, newspaper.
Is that when back when they called it advertisements?
Advertisements. Advertisements for tobacco and most other products over the next 70 years took the same form, mostly unadorned advertisements in the local or regional newspapers. So probably in my opinion, because I wasn't back then to see, or did I Google any images to try to see this type picture?
Sure.
Just a regular like black and white ad, letters, maybe slightly bolder font. Buy our stuff. Yeah. Buy our cigars. Yeah. Buy our tobacco snuff.
It's like the ads you see in the newspapers today, like, you know, Butler, you pull it, or rent, buy, sell, or you know, whatever.
Yeah, but now you see color and stuff and fancy.
Well, listen, this was in the 1700s. They may not have color newspapers back then. Let's give them a break. But the other thing is, I mean, this makes sense though, right? Because most everybody, all the cigars and the tobacco was made by family farms, by the wives on the tobacco farms, right? So, So if you're going to start pulling out advertisements, then you're going to want to, you know, hey, come to Vaughn Family Ranch and, you know, or whatever, you know, and buy our cigars. They're rolled by Mary Sue, and, you know, oh yeah, I like Mary Sue's stuff. Let me go over there and buy that.
I love Mary Sue's stuff.
Yeah. I could have said Mary Jane.
Oh, I saw where you was going there.
Hey. All right.
We're tobacco, sir.
Tobacco. So in the 1940s, tobacco companies hired doctors and dentists to endorse their products to reduce public health concerns about smoking risks. This is why you never trust doctors and dentists.
They can be bought.
Yeah, right. They can be bought. Using slogans like, quote, just what the doctor ordered, and more doctors smoke Camels, tobacco companies misled people, showing that physicians were also smokers and that cigars were fine for your health. Which we all know is a big fat load of hooey when it comes to cigarettes, guys. Cigarettes. Cigars are fine. Let's go.
So this exact reason is why I picked this topic. The exact reason. So I came across an old-fashioned like cigar ad or whatever. And it's,
oh, I thought you were about to say a drink.
And it started off with a health cigar.
Ooh.
Recommended by Thomas Mel O'Well Cigars to any who are interested in regaining or keeping physical fitness. I am convinced. Well, yeah. I'm convinced that irritants such as nicotine, glycerol.
Dice can't read.
I can't
read. We're all good.
What's the other? Abinoids and carbons. Yep. Dangerous when used in excess by those who are physically below par or largely removed from Thompson's Mel O'Well cigars. Many former patients, friends, and others who have consulted me and who ordinarily would be obliged to greatly curtail smoking are now enjoying their usual allotment of cigars and Thompson's Mel O'Wells with no loss of satisfaction or good health. I was like,
I could just see that being like red on the on the radio.
A lot better than right? that, though. A lot better.
Yeah, 100% better than that.
Okay, you
know? they could actually pronounce the words glycerides. But I could just see that being put out there, and you know these big dudes. I love smoking Mellow Wells because they keep me healthy. You know, like, dude, you're the most unhealthy person ever. You probably also drink moonshine straight from the still, and that's why you only got one eye. And
you mean that copper tube's not a straw?
No. You drink the top of them still, don't you?
Oh my goodness. So just imagine like a doctor prescribing you. Ah, yeah, you should go ahead and pick out some H. Edmonds on your way home.
But you know, I've seen old, you know, magazines or article clippings or something like that. You know, my grandparents' house or whatever, and there's straight up doctors smiling right there with their lab coats on and everything else, going, "I endorse Camel cigarettes," or you yeah. know. Ashton cigars, like what? Come on, like we all know that's you know fake. You just got bought. But yeah, there's another ad saying, "Yes, I'm a doctor, and I advise the smokers among my patients to smoke Girard cigars. In fact, I smoke them myself. There's nothing unusual about this either. Hundreds of physicians nowadays take some advanced and reasonable view. They allow their patients to smoke." But insist on mild cigars like the Girard. And thousands of smokers all over the United States are benefiting by this sensible advice. That, I mean, pay me now. Girard cigars probably went out of business.
I'm very confident. Very, very confident they're no longer a thing.
Yeah. But, you know, cigars, again, I will make this distinction really quick. Cigars are different than cigarettes, guys. Okay? They're different. Premium hand-rolled cigars are different than machine-rolled carcinogenic cigarettes.
But there's no such thing as a health cigar. We both there's can agree to that. Cigar. Even though 100%. It's organic.
It's organic. I'm just burning dead leaves. It's fine.
That's but just funny, man.
There's, yeah, there's a difference. Just throwing that out there. But in 1890s ad, Dr. Batty's asthma cigarettes, most likely menthols, warns against administering them to your kids unless they are at least 6 years old. Six. Y'all six.
Oh my goodness. Boy, what are you doing? You only five. You gotta wait at least one more year before you can smoke those Dr. Batty's asthma cigarettes.
Six. Y'all. Man, people a century ago were wild.
Letting six-year-old smoke.
I mean, so I guess cigars were a carnival prize, so.
You know.
I mean, in fairness, though, I got some kids that I work with nowadays, and they came up to me, and they're like, guess what? I had an espresso! And I was like, oh my, why? You are the furthest thing from a Nina's espresso. And they're like, I got an energy drink, too! And I was like, oh, that's not hydration. That is not hydration, kid. All right.
All right. 1931, Chesterfield cigarettes advertisement says it has on good authority that Chesterfield cigarettes are just as pure as the water you drink.
Who'd you get as good authority, Meth Mouth Carl over there?
Man, I came across these. It was literally like a rabbit hole. I'm telling you. I was going over and over and over, and I was like, so when, what, how?
So 1990s is when we stopped, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Just throwing that out there in case anybody didn't know. 1990s was when you could stop. You had to stop marketing tobacco to families unless it's in a specialized tobacco catalog, and then you had to be 21 or 18 to buy it or whatever it was. But yeah, tobacco ads, largely cigarette companies, would include things like great for asthma, throat protection, dentist suggests smoking, physician recommends, aids in digestion. You want to know how aids in digestion is? Because
okay, I'm sorry.
And aids in digestion, aids in digestion by pushing everything else out because of the nicotine.
But when I was reading these, I was like, aids in digestion. I got a little bit of a tummy ache. How about you give me one of those Chesterfields, my six-year-old boy?
I need that asthma cigarette. It helps my digestion tract.
My dentist recommended it.
Shimmy Christmas. This is what we get for going down rabbit holes for y'all people. Right. Aids of digestion. Yeah. You gotta take a shit afterwards.
Well, after they use the snake oil and the doctors and the physicians and whoever else they can get to pay off, they found a new category to start paying off thanks to Tinseltown, the magic of Hollywood here. They started pushing towards celebrity endorsements.
Yeah.
We don't want to listen to our doctor.
No, we want to listen to the people in the moving picture box.
So 1950s and 60s, tobacco companies brought and sponsored their own TV program, paid A-list celebrities to appear in ads. Later,
Marilyn Monroe.
Cultural icons like the Marble Man lured men.
He lured men with exaggerated fantasies of manliness and independence. Smokeless tobaccos have even used professional athletes to market their products.
Can't help it,
bro. That's you're losing it, man.
I can't help it, bro. I'm thinking about these stupid ads. Like, oh, you want to be more of a man like the Marble Man?
All right. Oh, yeah. Marble Man.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, don't sue me, Fox.
Oh, I can't. When I was doing this, I came across the oldest. The earliest American advertisement poster featured an endorsement of a commercial product by a player or sporting figure ever. Ever. 1874, Red Stocking Cigar advertising display poster featured George Wright. It was up for auction and it sold for $189,000. Now, I was.
That's just ridiculous.
I've never heard of George Wright. I apologize. And I never heard of Red Stocking Cigars.
They probably went out of business.
Fucking George Wright didn't do a good job then, did he?
No, apparently not. Apparently he sucked a big fat one.
Well, I did see that he was a baseball player. He won quite a few championships. This is before they had a league. They had several small leagues across the U.S. at the time. And he would play for the person with the most money, and they would win.
Yeah, he's baseball's first superstar player. He was a shortstop for the Cincinnati Red Stockings.
Oh, makes sense. Red Stockings, Red Stocking Cigar.
All right.
Okay.
So what this White Owl had an ad. It says, "It's the tobacco that counts," says Jesse Owens Chesterfield Cigarettes. Good Lord. "Take my tip. Smoke Chesterfield's much milder," says Jackie Robinson.
Take my tip.
I can't, that was the part that stopped me. I was like, I can't even.
Oh, and it had had Jackie Robinson there holding his bat, ready to swing. However,
yeah.
It's just when I saw "take my tip," like, is that like an old timey saying or something? Take my tip. I don't know.
You know, like, hey, I'm giving you a tip on the stock market, or I'm giving you this or whatever.
I mean, the celebrity endorsements, I mean, they go on forever and ever. Anybody who's as anybody at that time, Ray Charles, Ronald Reagan, Lucille Ball, and so many more, including the Flintstones.
Yabba dabba doo!
And I know everyone's seen, like, the old Flintstones on probably YouTube or something where they actually did cigarette commercials, but that's crazy to me. That's probably what started the marketing to kids.
Yeah.
Everyone had that feeling. Of course.
Yeah. So in 1970, Congress took their anti-smoking initiative one step further and passed the Public Health Cigarette Smoking Act, which banned the advertising of cigarettes on television and radio starting on 2 January 1971. In April of 1970, President Nixon signed it into law. After the television ban, most cigarette advertising took place in magazines, newspapers, and on billboards. And I remember a lot of this stuff, you know, like, hey, it's, you know, Skull or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, nowadays, I see a lot more for dispensaries. there's a billboard here. This guy, it goes, "Don't be scared for your first time. Come to whatever dispensary," and the dude's holding a joint, and he looks like constipated. He's like, "Like, I don't want to try it." I'm like, that's the worst face you could ever make, holding a joint. Like, anyways, I digress.
So I mean, saying that, I'm pretty confident that they're going to be the next one. Like, in the year 2023, Biden signed into law.
Yeah, it'd be like 19 or 20, 2040, 2050.
You said 19.
Sorry, we got to talk about old stuff. Speaking of old stuff, how's your first third?
Oh, was that a reference to me? You calling me old?
I'm just saying, there's not a lot of your original color left in your facial hair, sir.
Maybe I'll
do declare.
My first third. My burn line is a little. I've seen better burn lines. Let's just say that it's not bad. I've just seen better. Coffee and nuts.
I get a creamy coffee, nutty with a slight black pepper on the retro. On this one, the burn line's not terrible. On this one, it's pretty good so far. So,
well, yours actually has AJ Fernandez's name attached to it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if he. I didn't do any background study on this one. He probably ate it or had some say, but his name's not attached to it like yours is.
Right. Yeah. So in 1990s, tobacco companies introduced cartoon characters like Joe Camel to heighten tobacco's appeal. Look smooth, cool with Smoke Joe. Willie the Cool Penguin, the Marlboro Man, advertising continued in other forms like swag, Newport Windbreaker, Camel hoodies, Marlboro hats, earning points programs, Camel Cash, and everything else.
Yeah, I remember that time frame. Like, it was high school. People was jockeying for everyone's Camel Cash so they can get shit out of their little catalog or whatever, saving their points.
Yeah, I met you know, like grandparents and friends of grandparents. You know, they had Winston points or Marlboro points or whatever, and like, oh, I gotta save this up. If I smoke three more packs, I get a free three more cartons. I get a free carton or three free pack or something. And I was like, that sounds dumb.
I remember Newports when they were packaged with T-shirts. I remember that.
Yeah. So
but furthermore, it has been removed from sporting events, sponsorships. You probably remember the Winston Cup. It's no longer called the Winston Cup. But that trend, as I was doing my research, did not go global.
Of course not.
There's soccer or football companies out there that has sponsorships from several tobacco places. RJ Reynolds, I believe they have some sponsorship in other countries as well. Was like badminton, fucking polo, cricket. Fucking
badminton?
Badminton, homie.
Who the fuck watches badminton?
I don't know, but it was on the list.
You know what? If you watch badminton, you hit us up on Instagram and you tell me where the fuck you watch that other than ESPN The Ocho.
I watch darts on ESPN The Ocho. Badminton. Yeah, well, I guess fucking the
dodgeball all over again.
What's that newest craze that all these people claim to be? Pickleball?
Pickleball? Oh, Lord, don't get me started on pickleball, brother.
Come on, man, let's play some pickleball. Stop. Have you seen people play it?
No. I don't want to because you know what I found out? Kevin Durant owns a pickleball team.
Oh.
I don't know if you know that.
I did not.
Yeah, he's part owner in a pickleball team. Don't know what the fuck it's called, but I do know he's part owner in one. Oh. Anyways, so now ads can be seen in a very specific adult magazines or websites. And the guerrilla marketing is also a tactic. So, you know, they try to spring it on you or whatever. But, a lot of the billboards and a lot of the, you know, the newspapers, ads, and the just any magazine, you know, it used to be in home living, you know, Marlboro stuff and outdoor living or Southern Living or, you know, the what's it called? Bass Pro Shop, you know, they used to have like, you know, tobacco ads, whether it was smokeless tobacco or, you know, Marlboro or Camel or whatever. I remember seeing that stuff, and then you know we had to stop doing that because Americans can't control themselves.
Well, that was very specific. So if you pick up a Cigar Aficionado magazine or Cigar Snob magazine, of course it's going to have cigar ads and alcohol ads and whatever other kind of adult related type ads, which is, you know, I would kind of expect to see. I would hate to see like a Betty Crocker fucking cake ad in Cigar Aficionado. That really doesn't meet the demographics, I would assume.
What the fuck? I love to know how to bake a good wet ass cake, moist cake. That shit on point. I need some Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart would be a good,
Stop. Just stop.
Like, do you like your cigars? Go ahead and split it down the middle. Dump all the tobacco out. Use my Bic lighter.
I'm hanging out with Snoop Dogg with my Bic lighter.
Wearing Skechers.
More cigar. Oh my god.
Can you think of a guerrilla marketing ad that I guarantee you've seen one?
I'm sure that I have. I can't place it.
You want me to share? I'll share with you.
Sure. Do share. Do enlighten me, good sir.
The championship NBA game. The championship WNBA game. What was they smoking, sir? I don't know either, but I bet you you got to research. You can figure out exactly what they were smoking.
I do. So I do know that every sports team, you know, Joe Burrow won. Is what with LSU, right? So when he won the championship, and then when he won the AFC championship, everyone, you know, saw him smoking a cigar. And I do know my Facebook blew up with "What is he smoking? What's he smoking? What's he smoking?" I do know, like in The Last Dance, right? Michael Jordan, he yes. always has like a Lancero in his hand.
There you go, another guerrilla marketing. Now I'm,
but I don't consider that guerrilla marketing. I just consider that
maybe not Jordan, maybe not Jordan. But yeah. you're gonna tell me when he was smoking a cigar and it blew up on Facebook and everything. You're gonna tell me that company didn't provide that cigar to him? You think he randomly just picked the cigar and was like, "Oh, they're gonna take this picture and it's gonna go viral with me holding this cigar"?
That's fair. That's fair.
Guerrilla marketing. All
right. I'll give it to you. I'll begrudgingly give it to you, good sir.
Can you think of any more?
I mean, other than outside of sports games, like sports championships. I can't say that I can.
I can't pinpoint exactly like the name brands because I didn't do any research to figure out name brands. But whenever you see someone smoking a cigar like in a movie, I can't name one. Sopranos, Monte Cristo.
Okay.
When he, because it's Hollywood, right? So nothing's done accidentally. Everything is on purpose. So I don't know if you watch Sopranos or are very familiar with it, but there's a scene where he meets his uncle's doctor on the golf course, and he's like walking up to him and he's like, "Hey," and gives him a box of cigars. They're Monte Cristo cigars. And clearly you can see the top of the box, you can see the label, and the guy even says Monte Cristo, "Oh, like these are great," or however, whatever he said exactly in the show. But he made a point to actually say the name of the cigar, and you can see full logo on front of the box.
Yeah. That's fair. All right. So TV still has them, but it's a pop thing. Like, right. Oh, this just plays with whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure singing entertainers, rappers, I'm very confident that, like Nas has a cigar. You know that, right? Escobar.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, yeah.
Oh, wrong drink.
What?
Wrong drink.
What did you just say?
I was about to take a drink of the wrong thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to let you know that Dice made a mistake.
So, I mean, it's all fun and games. Is now, for me, I like to spot the advertisement. I like to spot the cigarette advertisement, the cigar advertisement, the hidden subliminal advertising that they're putting out there, because clearly they can't post in magazines, random magazines. It has to be adult related. Maybe right. Like something like Playboy.
Right.
Clearly, yeah. They can't put billboards up, especially right outside of a school zone. I mean, that's probably not smart.
Well, I mean, nowadays, lawmakers are going after, I think it was California I was reading, they're going after flavored stuff. They're actually trying to ban menthol cigarettes, just period. In an effort to try to make it as the tobacco as least appetizing to minors as possible.
Well, I'm waiting for them to do the plain packaging, because right now, like, you walk in a humidor at your local brick and mortar, it used to be a sea of brown, but now, like, my cigar, it had that nice green band. I know Gurkha has some shiny silvery stuff bands, and there's other colors out there like bright orange and fancy boxes and all kinds of things to draw the attention. I don't know if you remember, but when I went to Canada, all their packaging had to be the same. It's like a sea of brown. but I took their generic band off and the actual band was underneath. So it's still there. They just had to cover everything up.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you look at our Surgeon General warning, right?
Yeah.
On every tobacco product, warning may increase risk of blank, right? You know, all these, you know, pregnancy problems and cancer and death and da 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 on and on and on, right? You go to Europe and you go to Europe and read their warning.
Oh,
cigarettes will kill you. Period.
That's it. You will die.
That's it. You will die. Period.
Yeah.
They don't hold any blows back. It's not an increased risk of no. You will die. Period. That's their risk. That's the risk on their boxes.
Yes, you are
not increased risk of whatever. It is. You will die.
I've actually seen it firsthand, and I was like, "What?" And then I peeled the sticker off and kept it.
Yeah, well, because in Europe, you know, they still have cigarette vending machines, and those aren't a thing in the States anymore. You know, you can find some vintage ones at, you know, somebody's barn or a vintage antique store or whatever, but you know that it's. Their stuff is much more blunt and kind of in your face. You will die, period.
And you said vending machine, and that's going to sidetrack this whole thing right before we go to break.
What do I do?
Well, no, I'm about to sidetrack, and I'm really about to derail this whole thing.
Oh, don't worry. I'll bring us back. I'll tie it all together.
Okay. So I visited a cigar bar, cigar lounge. Let's go cigar lounge. Sometime earlier this week, right?
Okay.
The name of the spot is called Cigar Box. It's a pretty small place. I think we've been to it really quickly. They closed at 6, if you remember. And I got coffee. I'm not sure. Anyway.
No, we didn't go.
It sits about 40 people. The humidor has a decent collection. Like Olivas, LFDs, Atabays. It has a bar inside, but the bar is just coffee and whiskey. It's a whiskey bar. No mixed drinks, no anything. Whiskey bar. You can't get beer, and they have a very, very few selection of wines. It has 2 VIP areas. But when you said machine, this is why it made me think of this cigar lounge. It actually had an old school cigarette machine in the lounge. And it actually had like old school type cigarettes in it that you could still purchase right now from there. That's inside their location. So it still works. It's still everything. I was very inquisitive about it. I talked to the one of the, I don't know if he's an owner or worker or whatever. His name is Kelly. And he says it's a good spot for people that like to take their lunch breaks. They come in with their laptops and do work and stuff from there. That's mostly what they get is mostly locals that do that kind of things. They had nice leather chairs. In the back corner, they had one rolling table, like a tostador would use.
Okay.
But the thing is, what kind of upset me a little bit about it is they used it for storage. It just had a bunch of hodgepodge of crap just sitting on it. It wasn't out for like open display. So I think they kind of missed a little something there. 3 large TVs to watch. It was very clean. I talked with Kelly for quite a bit, and I told him about podcasts and everything. He's like, one thing that people always bring up when they ask him questions is when to actually stop smoking their cigar. When do you quit smoking? I was like, that's perfect. I can't remember the exact episode, sir, but we have an episode where we talk just about that.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm sharing all that just to say they had a cigarette vending machine inside the store.
Wow, I'm surprised that they're. I guess it makes sense because you're supposed to be 21 to even enter that place, and so that would make sense, you know, because you got to be 21 to even enter a tobacco place or a vape store or anything else anymore, right? And I remember that law changed, and it was kind of funny to me because I had workers for me, and they worked, and they were, you know, they were 20. And they'd been smoking, vaping for the last 2 years since they were 18. And suddenly the law changed. They couldn't do it anymore. And they had a hell of a time. They were bumming cigarettes off people and bumming everything they could to get that nicotine fixed because they got you know, kind of fucked over on that one. But I was just like, well, it sucks to suck, I guess. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, now you know, nowadays the advertisement and the legal everything age pretty much is 21. So, yeah, it is what it is. But you in your second, third?
I am I'm right on a cusp. I think we should take a break.
After the break. After the break. All right. So we'll take a quick break, and we will be back with you guys with our leadership topic of 7 leadership skills for risk managers. And yeah, so we just had a nice conversation about advertising for tobacco. All right, we'll catch you guys on the other side of the break.
All right, hey everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf. All one word.
At Leadership of the Leaf. And please, leave us a comment. Send us a message with what other questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Check me out, guys, on Instagram at Flavor King with 2 G's on there. And it's been a pleasure listening to Leadership of the Leaf here with Dice and Austin.
And welcome back to Leadership of the Leaf. We just had a nice talk about cigar advertisements, and how funny and silly they were back in the day. We're going to dive into our leadership topic of 7 leadership skills for risk managers. But first, before we go into that, Dice, second, third, you said you're going to have it. Second, I want third. It. What's your second, third?
Oh, I'm going to give it to you, sir.
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, man. As coffee.
Coffee.
Coffee, leather. And on that retro, I'm getting some kind of spice, and I want to put a name to it, but I can't, like, quite get my finger on it. Allspice?
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to go with allspice. How about you, sir? Right.
I'm getting that coffee is still kind of there, but it's like a chocolatey coffee, like a dark roast type coffee. With like some leather. Yeah, and that pepper's kind of faded out. It's really that chocolatey coffee kind of flavor. It's really good. There's a little bit of cream in there and just like a hint of leather. Like if you were to take, you know, like a creamed Dice is over here. Give me the bird.
Yeah.
I'll stop.
All right.
So risk managers. But first, what is risk management? So risk management is being aware of unprecedented hiccups in your projects. It includes discerning how the risk can affect your business, whether it's manageable, taking action to avoid it or its consequences. But oftentimes, risk management goes unseen. When everything is well, no one knows that how everything is going in the background, right? It's like the duck, right? Everything looks calm on top of the water, but underneath the water, it's paddling like crazy.
Yes.
But when something goes wrong, people are going to start asking what happened. Nonetheless, risk management is an art and a science. This means that you will need to have honed considerable leadership skills to be a successful risk manager. I like to think of risk managers as head coaches in sports.
Okay.
Right? So when the team is doing really well, people don't sit there and worry about what's going on behind the scenes, what's going on in the locker room, who's beefing with who. As long as the team is winning, right? Like, look at the Golden State Warriors. What was that, in 2017? 2016? They had a 73-win season?
Yes.
I don't remember exactly what the year, but either way.
Record-breaking
season. Everyone was like, oh, these guys are so good. Nobody cared as much about what was going on, what Steve Kerr was doing, what Draymond was doing, who was beefing with who. now you fast forward to like last season, and all of a sudden the news is lighting up about Draymond Green beefing with Jordan Poole and punching him during practice and stuff like that. And because the Warriors were not doing as well. They weren't winning as many games. They were in the bottom 10 of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? So everyone's starting to ask, well, what's going on in the back room? Well, how's the locker room been? What's the tone in the locker room? You know, da da da. Same thing with like the Chiefs, right? Like the Kansas City Chiefs. You sit there and they're winning and winning and winning. Nobody asks what the locker room situation looks like. Nothing. Right? They lose the AFC Championship to the Cincinnati Bengals, to Burrow, right? The Bengals went on to the Super Bowl that year and lost. And everyone started asking, well, what's the Chiefs locker room like? What's this? What's that? How are they handling this loss? Blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing, right? If your company is doing well, nobody asks how you're doing it. They just want to keep raking in the profits. The minute you start doing bad, everyone goes, what are you doing about it? How are you avoiding this? What are you doing to mitigate this risk? How are you fixing this? And so I think of risk managers as like being a head coach. That's how I liken it too.
When I first thought of it, I thought of pretty much the same thing you're speaking of now. Of course, risk management to me sounds more befitting to the show must go on.
Okay.
So if someone has a sore throat, but they're about to sing, they do some kind of numbing for their throat so they can continue to sing, or a leg cramp or something like that, and a dancer still is out there performing. A great example for that, I saw, what's his name, Childish Gambino. He hurt his leg like months and months before the show that was watching, so he was still injured, but he came out and performed, and you wouldn't even know he was injured until,
right?
Because where I was sitting, I could still see backstage. It was like a split screen. It was kind of cool. And when he finished his little set or whatever, he got in the wheelchair and they pushed him off.
Yeah.
So the show must go on. So,
right.
I had no idea, but you know.
Yeah, quarterbacks do the same thing. Patrick Mahomes had that high ankle sprain, and they pulled him out to take an X-ray, and he's like, it's a high ankle sprain. I know what it is. It's a high ankle sprain. Well, let's take an X-ray to be sure. Fine, whatever. Boop. All right, cool. It's a high ankle sprain. Let me get back out there. And he went back out there and played, and I think he won the Super Bowl on that high ankle sprain that year. I'm pretty sure it was the 2022-2023 season. He won the Super Bowl on that high ankle sprain. All right, show must go on. So risk management is just trying to either mitigate the risk that is facing you and your team, right? Like, hey, we're about to push out a brand new product. How do we know that this product is actually what the market wants? Or something like that. Well, let's do market research. Hey, that's a great way to figure out if the market's going to react to this or not like that or anything else. So you go through some steps, right? So let's break down the 7 must-have leadership skills for every risk manager.
All right. So number one, which I think it fits for me, I really, when I was researching this, analytical risk assessment. As a leader, it would help you if you have analytical skills. This could come in handy when assessing and predicting risk. For one, it allows you to collect and evaluate data for any gaps. Doing so can prompt you to see a potential hazard and conduct further research. But more than that, being analytical allows you to make fair use of data you collected. That's because risk management will require you to make strategic and tough decisions. So you would start off with like you would need to identify the risk.
Yeah. What is the risk of putting out a new product? What is the risk of changing our policy or procedure? What is the risk of doing this new thing, venturing into this new unknown, right?
So after you like you were soul doing very well is you identified the risk. So the next part of that is once you identify it, you have to, you know, do your risk analysis of it. You have to pull some data. Yeah. So we sold 300 chocolate ones. So how well would white chocolate do? It's still chocolate, but it's white chocolate. How will, you know, you will pull data as you will look at numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like I was saying, right? So you want to push out a brand new product. Okay. How's the market going to react? Let's do You know, blind taste tests. Let's do, you know, focus group studies. Let's do this, that, the other, right? So, you know, team goes through a rebranding. Hey, what do you guys think the risk is for us, moving a team from Seattle to Oklahoma City? Just saying, I'm a Thunder fan. Let's go.
good luck.
Right? What's the risk? Okay, you're probably gonna alienate some fans in Seattle. Okay, cool. What's the gain? Okay, you're gonna gain an entire state. All right, and possibly a little bit more from Kansas and Texas and everything else, or and Arkansas and maybe New Mexico. So you're gonna gain a couple of those fan bases, right?
Yeah, and your diehard will also move over too.
Yeah, your diehards are gonna move over with you. You got it. That's 100% right. So then you got to do risk mitigation. So you start out with, hey, we're going to do press releases. Hey, we're going to move the team. Hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. Hey, you know, start giving ultimatums, build us a new stadium or else, right? Like LA. So the Rams, right?
Yeah.
The Rams went from LA to St. Louis. Okay. So they were there for 20 years. I think 30 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So then they moved back to LA. What's the risk of that? How do they mitigate that? Okay. They gave St. Louis a chance. Hey, build us a new stadium. Hey, do these things. Hey, we're going to start press releasing. We're going to start pushing this out. We're going to let everybody know that we're doing this. You know, do everything you can to get the word out. If you're pushing out a new product or you're changing a process, you're going to push out memos. You're going to do ad campaigns. You're going to do policy memos. You're going to identify your change managers to figure out how we're going to mitigate this risk. If it's a new process and there's some safety aspect into it, hey, if it's like, instead of casting, we're going to do casting and welding. All right, well, what do we need to mitigate the risk of welding? Okay, cool. We're going to need PPE. We're going to need some masks. We're going to need some gloves. We're going to need the machines. We're going to need training. Mm. All of these things that we're going to do to mitigate that risk.
Right. And then once you get that ball rolling with all those other steps, of course, you got to put it in motion, right? You want to keep tabs of what's going on. Be like, you know what? That didn't quite work because I've been monitoring it and the numbers kind of fell off a little bit here. So maybe we need to, you know, pivot just a little bit or whatever it needs to be. But you have to closely monitor every step that you took to get there to see what is working, what's not working, because that's the whole thing. You're trying to mitigate that risk. So if you don't monitor it, you're just pretty much just pissing in the wind. I believe that's the saying.
Yeah. Well, so I know, like, when I first started working for you, there's a brand new checklist out, right? We had to move a piece of equipment. And in the past, there had been some safety accidents where people got basically the safety equipment or the equipment got rolled over their foot. So I think there was like two incidents where people broke their foot or their ankle or whatever. So the risk mitigation was, let's do a checklist, make sure everybody understands the role, exactly what the heck we're doing. We're gonna fill it out and we're gonna say we're good and we're going forward. The problem was, is while that was a great idea, nobody was monitoring for compliance.
Correct. I remember that.
Nobody gave a shit. So they just pushed it out and they said, hey, this is what we're doing. Go forth and conquer. And then let us do what we do. And if anybody has ever worked in any sort of blue collar job, maintenance type job, warehouse job, whatever, like, you know, if nobody's looking, you're just going to do what you always do. I'm just being honest.
Like, this checklist is stupid. We're just going to take care of business.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to monitor to make sure that people are doing the right things, right? They're using their protective equipment that you gave them. I like to watch Forged in Fire, right? The show on History Channel. This dude straight up came on there and goes, hey, this Forged is a risky business. I have had two lens replacements. His eyes had to be, his lenses got burnt up so bad because he was constantly looking at Forges for 20 years and they were so bright that he burnt his lenses.
Wow.
And the dude could only count to 9.
I caught that.
Yeah. So, you know, he lost a finger, right? So he may have had some risk mitigation that he could have done was start using his protective equipment, use some sunglasses, use some safety equipment, slow the fuck down, all that sort of stuff. But it's up to him to monitor himself. And if he doesn't do that, he doesn't give a shit. So he just can't keep going. But that's pretty important. So skill number two is problem solving. You can't mitigate or monitor unless you solve the problem. So if you see a potential risk in your project or business operation, you must know how and where to search for answers. Competitors might have the answers. There's somebody that's there. I'm sure that at some point somebody has tried to do something and you can learn from somebody else's mistakes.
Correct. Yes.
So doing so can help you find and create strategic answers to avoid those risks, or at least help mitigate and reduce the amount of risks.
Right, because problem solving is and when I think of problem, it's all mathematical to me. 1 + 1 = 2. There's no steps in between. It's just straightforward. 1 + 1 = 2. So problem solving is, if I need to get a point A to point B, the best way to do it is like this. Oh, there's a big ditch in the middle. So we need to solve a problem, build a bridge. Analytical thought process, is this heavy enough to hold the bridge, to weight and all this stuff, and you do math and get your engineers involved, and you build this bridge. Bridge wasn't big enough. That's a problem. Let's see, how can I solve that? Let's make the bridge wider. Let's do this, let's do that. So problem solving is definitely a key step. Mainly you find it during the monitoring like stage or however it needs to fit in your puzzle. But problem solving is definitely a skill that is required. One manager, leader, whatever you want to call them, that I had, which I still appreciate this response to today. The worst case scenario is not making a decision. So if you're sitting there trying to problem solve and you don't come up with any kind of solution or answer, that's worse than coming up with a wrong solution or answer. Because if you come up with something wrong, be like, oh, I only made the bridge this wide, and I don't know what to do now. If you just sit on your hands with nothing to do, you're going to be back at square one instead of problem solving. Like, maybe I can get two bridges and push them together. I don't know. However you need to solve the problem, it's definitely best to make some kind of decision than none.
Yeah. So my grandpa always used to tell me, he was an old farmer. And, and I always asked him, I was like, hey, you know, he fought in World War II, right? You know, he's tank commander on the beaches of Normandy. And I always asked him, you know, hey, what's your best piece of advice? And he always told me, lingering is but folly. And I was like, and I never understood. I was like, what the fuck? What does that mean? Lingering is but... And so finally he told me, he goes, look, if you wait so long to make a decision that you end up making no decision, you are wrong. The best thing you can do, even if it is the wrong one, because you can always adjust fire, is to just make a decision, stick with it, and go. Go forth and conquer. If you miss that because you messed up and you made the wrong decision, adjust. But if you make no decision, you cannot adjust. If you sit there and go, I'm so overwhelmed with this process and how am I going to do all of this, and you're overwhelmed to the point of inaction, you are absolutely in the wrong. You have to sit there and make a decision. I've listened to some of the best people in the business world. I've listened to them talk, and they said, look, you have to get comfortable with making decisions with maybe 60% of the required information and be nimble enough to adjust when you have 80 to 90% of that information if you were wrong, if you made the wrong decision.
Well, that leads to strategic thinking. Risk can affect various parts of a business. Hence, risk management should be someone who can look at all the possibilities. This is where strategic thinking comes into play. A strategic person knows when to step back, look at the bigger picture. Aside from that, he also knows which part of the big picture he needs to break the problem, the root cause of the problem. That way, it would be easier to look for a solution and opportunities to improve the system. And I believe you brought up something like this before, where was it SWOT? SWOT.
Yep, SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, right? So you identify what your strengths are, you identify your weaknesses, you see where the opportunities lie, and you figure out what your threat is to that new process. So you break this down into a four little quadrant chart, right? And so you go, all right, my strengths are, I have a very nimble team, they're very adaptable, you know, they're smart and they can think on their feet and they're not afraid to suggest new things. My weaknesses are, once they get stuck on something, you know, they rush into things. All right, that's a weakness. You know, okay, cool, got that. You know, maybe they look without leaping or you know, whatever the case is. All right, so where's my opportunities lie? All right, well, we can make a decision and they're gonna adjust to it. And if I made the wrong decision, then I can just adjust fire. But my threat is that they do something that I don't want them to do in case they encounter a problem or something to that effect. You figure it out along the way.
Right, you can either talk it out with a team, get a whiteboard, and group it all together, however you need to see fit, but it's definitely going through your strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities to mitigate threats in this whole nine. Once you, that's kind of like seeing the bigger picture as a whole spectrum. Now, if you don't need the whole big picture, as I was saying earlier, you can focus in on one part, like the stupid bridge analogy I keep using. Like you can get up to that point. You can even, after the bridge, you can get up to that point. Your problem that you focus on is that bridge. So the bigger picture is not the whole travel now. It's just that one section where you have the bridge. So you don't need to keep looking at the bigger picture because everything else is going to be almost a distraction.
Yeah. So I remember in high school, we had the career day, right? Where you got to, we had a shadow program where you got to shadow what you wanted to be in the future so you could see if you liked that job. Mm. I chose a mechanical engineer and he worked for an oil and gas company. And he was saying, hey, we have a problem at our refining plant. And he's like, I just want to see what you guys come up with. And it was me and one other kid from my high school. So he described the problem was basically what they get is this hot slag, right? Which is sand and rock and mineral that comes out that they have to extract the oil from, right? So they pump the oil out while it comes with rock and sediment and everything else. And then they wash it and everything else, but it's hot and it's slag, so it creates a bunch of steam. They're saying, hey, we have to basically ship this out in trucks. But there's a guy up here that's supposed to pull the lever, but it's hot. So how do we keep that guy safe? Like, right? Does he, if he pulls the lever, he's just gonna get blasted with hot steam. So how do you protect that guy? And we came up with a myriad of ideas, right? Put it on a timer, put it on a button, you know, a dude with a button and a safe room, give the guy a flame retardant suit so he's protected from the heat, you know, put it on a sensor or something, you know, whatever the case. Like, we came up with a bunch of ideas, right? And he sat there and he goes, you guys in 10 minutes came up with almost all the solutions that a room full of engineers came up with in 3 days. And I was kind of proud of that. But it was one of those things where you kind of sit, like an outside perspective, right? You sit there and you kind of go, well, here's the solution right here. Here's an idea. So maybe if you're having problems and your team isn't coming up with very good ideas, or you're like, man, we're missing something, go to an outside source, explain the problem to them, and see what they say. Even if they have no background in the problem, in the process or the policy or whatever you're about to do, go, hey, does this make sense? Am I making sense to you right now? Does this solution make sense? Explain the problem, and then if they come up with something, you're like, yeah, that doesn't really work because I forgot to mention X, Y, and Z. Okay, cool. Now he can adjust fire, and you can brainstorm a little bit with somebody with an outside perspective. It may help give you that idea. If you take somebody, you're about to push out a new marketing campaign, and all your salesperson's like, this is great, I love it. Go to your development team. Go to your warehouse workers. Go to somebody who actually has to do the work and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? They're going to be like, that's dumb as hell. And here's why. Boom, 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 boom. You're like, shit, I didn't even think about that stuff.
And that's,
hey, you know,
more data.
That's that strategic thinking.
Yeah, more data to put in the old bucket of information there.
Yeah, there's always more. There's always people that are... I have found this about the human race. There is never hardly anybody who's willing to offer an opinion. Everybody has an opinion about something. So if you ask somebody their opinion, they're more than likely going to give it to you usually, depending on their, you know, your level, if you're the CEO, they may not. But like, if you know, you have a manager, if you say, hey, go get me data about what the workers think about this new policy, I'm thinking they're going to come back and they'll be like, hey, boss, man, your marketing team says this is a great idea. And your salesperson think this is wonderful that they put the orders in that, like 3 days ahead. But your warehouse worker says that ain't going to work because that's just going to back them up. And they're not going to know which orders need to go out first because there's no date time system down there and no way to organize this stuff there. Ah, fuck. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about the warehouse workers. I just thought about the salespeople. All right, cool. Let's adjust fire then.
Right.
Number four, financial literacy. So as mentioned earlier, a risk can affect various parts of the business, right? Including the finances. This includes overhead costs, employee salary, taxes, revenue, etc. Why is it important for a risk manager to have financial literacy? Because all businesses have financial risk. For instance, when a client made adjustment requests, it can affect their budget and completion schedule. Although this is the only thing that most clients and business owners understand, the numbers can be frightening. A good risk manager can identify, measure, and mitigate those financial risks. So you look at income assessment, expense tracking, financial goals. You got to create a budget, monitor and adjust if you're off track for whatever reason. You have to save and invest it back in your business, and you have to learn and grow. Johnson & Johnson, Kroger, I can name a gajillion businesses that had to sit there and learn and grow, right? CVS. I was just reading a case study about CVS pharmacies, and it kind of comes full circle, right? So, back in 2013, CVS pharmacy made the business decision to market themselves as a health company, right? So what they did in 2013 is they stopped selling all tobacco products.
I remember that.
Because how could they be a health company if they're selling tobacco products? That's their thought, right? So they had to look at it. Their tobacco products, you wanna know how much they brought in on tobacco sales alone?
I would imagine.
Guess a number.
Let's go 1.2 billion. Too high?
$2 billion.
I didn't even go high enough.
$2 billion a year on tobacco sales alone, and they took it off the table because they wanted to market themselves as a health company. $2 billion. That's billion with a B.
I'm pretty sure they had to do a lot of risk assessment for that.
Absolutely. You think they didn't look at their incomes? They didn't look at their expense tracking? Financial goals? You think they didn't create a budget and monitor? They did all of that.
Well, I mean, that goes back down to the list that you was naming, your income assessment. So income assessment, of course, is how much money you're bringing in. So your expense tracking, to that's how much money you're putting out. So your financial goals, to whatever you're trying to achieve as a company, of course. Then once you get those numbers, then you create a budget for said numbers that you was just assessing. Then you have to monitor and adjust. Be like, we're gonna have to do a lot of adjustment because we just lost $2 billion from this whole tobacco sales. Monitor and adjust. Then saving and investing. So with whatever money that they could achieve, I'm pretty confident they had to put something in savings and invest. Yep. They had to invest more into their picture of being more of a healthy alternative to their competitors. I'm pretty sure that's how they was trying to market themselves, learning and growing. Yeah. So I'm pretty confident that because they lost $2 billion from the tobacco side of the sales, learning and growing, I'm very confident they learned another area where they can get more income from to continue to grow.
Yeah, so they actually put in, they instilled a program, the Minute Clinic. Right, so they had nurse practitioners sit there, and people could come in for not serious stuff, right? Like, hey, I think I have strep throat. Could you guys test me? Boom, test. Yep, you got strep throat. Hey, by the way, we're a pharmacy. I'll just write you a script. We can fill it right here. Bing, bang, boom. It's a one-stop shop. There you go, out the door. Boom. they have these minute clinics. They could do telehealth, that sort of stuff. They've been learning and growing to try to make up that revenue of that $2 billion of tobacco. And so they said, hey, if we're going to be a health company, let's have a nurse practitioner or a PA or somebody like that that can diagnose some people, write a script, we'll fill it in house. Boom, we make the money off that sale from their insurance or whatever co-pays they have, all that sort of stuff. Boom, we make that money. So now we have the money from their insurance for the visit. We have money from their insurance for the script that we just wrote them. And we have money from their co-pay if they have any. And bang, bang, boom, we just made money, like a bunch of money off that one person from their insurance company and co-pay.
Yeah, because I remember back in the day, they didn't really do all that before. So that MinuteClinic is definitely, especially tapping into the insurance money market, that's a huge, the health insurance market is huge, huge. And I don't know which would be bigger, but obviously it's worked out for them. So.
Well, especially because around that time, something came out, the ACA, right? The Affordable Care Act came out, requiring everybody to have insurance. So everyone had insurance for that time being. So they knew if people were getting subsidized to get insurance, then they came in to see their Minute Clinic, boom, they got the money from their insurance for the copay or for the visit and the script and their copay.
So with that falls directly in line with number 5, regulation robustness. Implementing risk management strategies could mean changes in company regulations. But that doesn't mean you should do a happy dance whenever changes are made. What that means is by regulation robustness is that you know to stay abreast about regulation changes and updates. Plus, it would help if you can understand how these changes can affect various business parts. For instance, they knew that the Affordable Care Act was coming out. How can we tap in and get a slice of that pie? So that regulation change actually benefited them when they started the Minute Clinic.
Yep.
For instance, it would change in leadership affect project completion. You need to assess immediate whether the changes can pose risk. Hence, you should be able to explain it to the affected party and think of ways to mitigate it. Otherwise, people's concerns will be meh about it. So I'm pretty sure when they first lost tobacco, a lot of people was very upset, but the board of directors and all that stuff, they probably was meh about it because they knew what they was going to try to roll out with this healthier pharmacy.
Right. Well, and like right now, so I work in project management, and we've been complaining about a lack of a contractor meeting their projected timeline, right? And it's been an ongoing struggle for years. And the contract's coming to an end, and obviously we're not going to renew it because they're not meeting their timelines. But and in order to try to for that company to try to help meet those timelines, what they did is they fired the old director. They said, get out, you're done. They brought in a new director to cut down those times and get closer to contractually obligated timelines. And they did that because they want to be able to get another contract. Now will they get it? I doubt it. But you know, it's just one of those things, like, hey, if we're gonna have a contract with this company and we're not meeting our contractual timelines, obligated timelines, then we're going to have to do a leadership swap, and we're going to have to bring in a new leader to maybe hopefully drive us to be a little bit better about it. And, you know, maybe it was the leader's fault. Maybe it was worker's fault. I don't really know because I'm not there. I don't want to speak for that contractor. But it's just one of those things where, you know, they're going to sit there and change leadership to potentially get that project complete on a better timeline. That's a regulation. That's a robustness. You guys got to get it. Get in there and get a hold of everything and figure out exactly what the heck is going on with those regulations. Exactly like CVS figured out that the ACA was coming out, so we're going to do the Minute Clinic so we could write scripts, so we can be a health company, so he could get a slice of that good old insurance pie. Right?
Right. All that constitutes to the next step, which is relation building. Relationship building. Another essential quality of an excellent risk manager is his ability or her ability to build, because we're woke, build meaningful relationships. Here's the thing. You need to connect with various people to look at and manage risk. These can be your clients, project managers like yourself, department heads, the CEO, whoever, board of directors, whoever it could be. Thus, it would be handy if you also know how to produce risk reports for various audiences. That's because priorities differ from one person to another. To the project manager, that could be ensuring that his team is not overwhelmed with work. For the client, all they care about is the completion of the project. And as far as your CEO, the priority might be, of course, revenue.
Right. CEOs are usually paid with respect to how well the company is doing. Their bonuses are usually tied to milestones, right? So how well the company is doing. It's the stock price XYZ. So they're gonna focus on how do we drive the stock price up for our stakeholders, because that's what I get if I get paid extra because I did a good job by driving up the stock price, right?
Right.
For the client, all they care about is, did I get a good product and is it on time?
Correct.
For the team, they may be going, hey, we're overwhelmed with work. We need additional manpower. I don't give a shit about the CEO. I don't give a shit about the client. I can't meet it with, if this is a 10-person job and you guys gave me 3 people, fuck you. I need at least 4 more to even start trying to make this on time.
And all that falls in the whole assessment of this picture that we're looking at is the risk management. So if you, just as you just went through each of those categories, so the risk there is we're going to burn out from our workers. We probably have people quit, be like, F this noise. This is, they're trying to, get blood from a turnip here. We need more people. So part of your analysis could be like, we need more people on this side. If we want to meet all these other requirements, we need at least 10 workers and we only have 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Workers, especially nowadays, are not shy about going and finding more work. This is not your grandfather's work environment or your great-grandfather's work environment. They're not loyal to a company for 20, 30, 40 years anymore. These guys are jumping jobs every 1 to 2 years.
Yeah.
And if they find out that, hey, I'm doing the same job and I could get paid 2 times as more or 3 times as more if I go to this other company, a competitor, because they say, hey, we need 10, we need at least 4 more people. We're willing to pay those 4 more people a good salary. Then why the hell would they stay working for a company that still only has 3 when they could go get paid more to have less work?
Absolutely. And I see it in my job. I see it actually quite often, a little too often, I guess. But either way, I definitely understand it. Maybe I need to hire a risk manager.
Yeah, or be a risk manager. So the last skill is systemic adaptability. In case you haven't noticed, the risk manager is a stressful job. It's because risk management includes looking for possible issues that may arise, figuring out a solution. It can be expensive and detrimental for a business if that risk is not contained. Having a system in place can help you manage the stress involved in your job. And lucky for you, creating a risk management system does not have to be stressful. If you have a risk manager, that is what they are there for. If you don't have a risk manager, whether that is somebody who is on a project and that's their team lead, and you say, hey, your job as team lead is risk management. You now have a risk manager. They may not be that entitled, but they do that in their work. I want you to look at all these risks that are coming through for this team, and I want you to mitigate all those risks. Whether that's I need new protective equipment, I need more team members, I need a financial accountability, I need expense reports, I need you to tell me what the problems are, how you think we should mitigate those problems, and what you need from the board of directors, from the CEO, from the CFO, the COO, all those corporate level managers, I need to know all this stuff, because that's, I could go then go advocate, or that person can go advocate on the team's behalf and say, hey, look, boss, I understand you want this project done in, you know, 3 months, but if you want me to do it in 3 months, I got to prioritize some stuff, and I'm going to have to put some stuff on the back burner, or I need more people.
Everything you just said fits exactly like the closing of the wrap up of this, the importance of risk management. Risk management allows a leader to set up systems that can help avoid unfavorable events. It also fosters resiliency and helps in minimizing the impact of risk. Plus, companies with risk management plans can reap the following benefits, as you were saying. It saves valuable resources and assets. Safe and secure environment for employees and clients. More stable business operations and reduced legal liabilities. Simply put, risk management allows you to run your business without interruptions. So I mean, that's everything you was just describing.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, risk management is, in my opinion, an underrated area of business. If you sit there and you actually took a look at the risks of doing business, you have to be comfortable with a certain level of risk. There has to be this is the cost of doing business, right? If you look at, if you go to any military commander and you say, what is the acceptable rate of loss of personnel when you go to war and you're in a confrontation, they're going to tell you probably around 10%. 10%. Okay, cool. They're going to accept that. That is the cost of doing business to them. So if you're trying to be an innovative company, or you're trying to be, push out new products or something like that, you have to be comfortable with the level of risk and sit there and say the cost of doing this project and the cost of doing this business is going to be
$2 billion.
That I'm going to lose X, Y, or Z and profits and clients and whatever else because you're changing processes. Workers, hey, I'm probably going to lose 10% of my workers because they don't like the new processes. They're stuck in their ways. They don't like it. Got it. We need to be an innovative company. Go forth and conquer, right? So, but this all explains why you have to hone the skills if you want to be a great risk manager, right? We talked about the 7 skills: analytical risk assessment, problem solving, strategic thinking, financial literacy, regulation robustness, relationship building, systemic adaptability. All of those are important. If I had to pick one, I honestly don't know that I could pick one, but if I probably had to, I would say it's somewhere between analytical risk assessment and relationship building, because if you have good relations with people, you can make you can make things work for a short-term gain. If you have that analytical risk assessment, you know what your risks are. You know what the cost of doing business is. And you can try to use that relationship building piece to cover that 10, 20% or whatever the case is that your risk is, to say, hey, I'm okay with this acceptable level of risk based on the numbers, based on the relationships we have with our clients, our team members, and anybody else we do business with. I'm okay with this because of these things.
No, there's one part of this that I'm not okay with.
Oh,
I'm not okay without knowing your final third.
Ooh, my final third. So I'm having to relight again, real quick.
Oh,
I've been talking too much.
Well, I mean, this is a good subject. I definitely understand, because it's a robust. And when I was doing this whole research at the end, you know what I noticed? It fits one of my little things that I like to say: assess the situation, coach. Now, I normally don't use it as such a broad stroke, a big stroke as in risk management, but if I was to break it down, the assess the situation coach fits all 7 of these categories.
Absolutely. Final third is
Interesting. I'm getting leather.
That cocoa and that sweetness is kind of melted away. I'm getting kind of a nutty, leathery, with a little bit of white pepper in the back. It's very good. It's very good. The burn line's great. I've only had to touch this up because I've been talking so much. But it's good. The ash is great. Burn line is nice. Nice and good. It's pretty even. It's a pretty thin burn line too, so that tells me that's good. The tobacco's been worked really well. I'm good with this cigar. What about you, good sir?
Because you kept you in yours with that burn line. So I've been looking at my burn line pretty much the whole time. My burn line is not razor thin, like I'm used to seeing on a lot of cigars that we smoke. I'm not saying it's a bad burn line. Yeah, I'm looking at yours in the camera now. Yeah, your burn line is better than mine. I'm definitely getting leather and more of like a coffee nut. It's almost like if you was to make coffee with nuts in your coffee mix. It's kind of strange. Not strange. Strange isn't the right word. It's definitely something I'm not used to getting from a flavor note of my cigar with the coffee and nut mix so well like that. The ash has been phenomenal. The smoke output is great. This is overall, it's a good cigar.
Yeah. All right. I'm down with it. So doing all of these things, right? The risk assessment, the problem solving, strategic thinking, financial literacy, regulations, relationships, and systemic adaptability. Doing all these things are going to allow you to support the business and its people. There's an importance there, right? The business is supported, and so are the people. Right?
Yeah.
Moreover, you need these skills to help them accept and adapt to changes, because changes in business are inevitable, right? We talked about some cigar companies in the in the first half. Those cigar companies may be out of business by now, right? But if you look at a company like Arturo Fuente or Romeo y Julieta or Monte Cristo or something like that, some of these legacy brands that have been around for ages, they've adapted to the tastes of their consumers. Changes are only going to work. Risk assessment is only going to work if everyone's on board, because of great leaders that help mitigate that risk, right? So you have your change agents. If you're changing a process, hey, I understand that we've been doing business X, Y, Z, and I got that. I think we could be more efficient if we did Z, X, Y. And the reason I think this is because of, you know, A, B, and C reasons, whatever that it is, that's only going to work if those people that you have with you and the change managers and the leaders that you have with you have assessed that risk, said, hey, yeah, this makes sense, it's going to lighten our load, and people accept it. Because if you don't have those relationships, if you don't have that analytical risk assessment, if you don't have that strategic thinking and the financial literacy to sit there and back up those changes, you're going to lose. There's millions of businesses go out of business every year because they are not those things.
Correct. Another thing that could possibly help some of these businesses is deciding on if their cigar is going to be worthwhile. Like some people want to decide if their cigar is going to be box worthy, the cigar is going to be like a 5-pack, or maybe the consumer is only going to buy one or two. And if you had to make that assessment about your cigar, what would that be, sir?
First off, great segue. if I had to give this one, I would probably go a minimum 5-pack of this cigar. I'm upset that I don't have another one in my humidor. It's a good cigar. It's very taste friendly. It's not too super strong. It hadn't kicked me on my rear end like some of the other ones. But it's very good. I don't know if I would go completely box. But I would definitely do 5-pack, and I'd be okay with that. I want to smoke more. but I definitely would throw it in a normal rotation. So I don't know if I'd go full box, but I'd definitely go five pack.
All right.
Well, what about you, my friend?
This cigar has been, it's a good cigar. I don't want to say anything negative. It's definitely a good cigar. It's surprising to me that it's actually a full strength cigar. So saying that it's a full strength with the flavor notes that I was getting, I'm going to say one or two. I'm going to say one or two.
Just really?
Just for that reason. Because the full strength doesn't really fit the flavor profile, and in my opinion, of course. Other people are probably like, I love the Day Trader. I'm going to go one or two. Is it worth smoking? Yes. Would I smoke it again? Yes. Would I buy a box of them? Nah. Would I get a five pack? Not really. Would I have one or two? Yeah, I'll definitely pick this up. One or two. Something different.
All right. I'm down with it. So we've talked about cigar advertisements and how much they have progressed in the years since 1700s, 1789. And then we got to talk about our seven leadership skills for risk managers, which are definitely, definitely needed in the leadership arena. I think it's an overlooked part. I don't want to say it's overlooked. People do this every day without realizing it. But I think if they put a little bit more effort and they realize what they were doing, they'd say, oh man, this makes so much more sense. I understand what I'm doing now and why it's important I do what I do when I do what I do. You know, they put a little bit more effort into it. They'd say, hey, let me actually break down those financials. Let me break down the risk of everything that I want to actually do.
What is here to have this in their toolbox. I do know that there's positions out there where this is pretty much their job. That's what their job is. But being a leader, you don't want to be solely reliant on one person or a group of people that are in some kind of risk management office or whatever. You are being a good leader. You want to keep risk management also on your plate. You don't want to just put it off your plate. You want to keep it. So I when I was doing this topic, I thought it was great to have in a leadership toolbox.
No, 100%. I agree. It's definitely one of those things I think a leader needs to have. And I think a lot of young leaders nowadays don't give enough credit to. Yeah. You know, they do it without realizing that they do it. But if they would take the time to take a step back and they realize, hey, this is what I'm doing risk management. And I'm doing all these seven steps. I need to focus a little bit more on how do I cut down those risks? How do I make these changes? How do I manage this change of X, Y, and Z? You know, push out a new product, policy, procedure, whatever the case happens to be. They're gonna go, oh yeah, this makes sense. I need to get more input. That's why my changes have been failing. Oh, I need to get more market research. I need to do more focus groups. I need to figure this stuff out. And they would do a lot better on it.
All right, sir. Those are great topics, and we're going to have more great topics for future episodes, I promise.
Absolutely. My name's Austin.
And I'm Dice.
I just want you guys to remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
All right, till next time.
Catch you guys on the next one.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.